And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 872. Trade deadline was wild over the last Sunday and Monday this past week. A lot of players have been discussed for their fantasy baseball value because, well, they're in the major leagues. But there's more to most of those trades, especially if you're a bad team like the Giants. You just wanted all the prospects in the world. So we're going to talk the prospects side of these trades that I don't think it enough love, at least not in the world I live in. But there are people that give it the love. And that's why I have this wonderful gentleman joining me once again, a friend of the show, a friend of ours. You can find his Substack, Forcing Fantasy. Really, really good stuff there. Just he pumped out first-year player draft rankings and like updated prospect stuff. He's always doing stuff over there. But he also wrote an awesome article on the prospect fallout from the trade deadline. We're going to cover that tonight. And he also does work over at pitcherlist.com and much, much more. I'll let him cover all that for you in a minute. But you can find him on Twitter at m_ski22. Martin Sikulski, how you doing, my friend?
Bubba, it's been a long time. It's good to see you. I know we interact on the Discord quite a bit, text every once in a while, but it's good to see your face and looking forward to a good show tonight. So let's do this.
Yeah. I was like, okay, I think if there's anybody I could try to throw a Hail Mary out to, I think this is my guy. So you're the first one I contacted on this. I'm like, and he said yes. So I'm pretty pumped to talk about it. Before we get started talking prospects, because there's a lot of them. Like Martin wrote over 8,000 words, I believe, on the prospects in this draft. So before we talk about all of that, again, I kind of mentioned where they can find you. Plug what you got going on and where they can actually find you.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Substack, Forcing Fantasy, Dynasty right over at Pitcher List, kind of the senior guy over there, which is just another word for old. And then we've got a new podcast that we've been doing for a couple of months now with Matt Heckman and Jacob Milham over at the Pitcher List side called Destination Dynasty. So check that out as well. And just living the dream, my friend, living the dream.
That is what we do in this neck of the woods and this labor of love we call fantasy content. So, I highly recommend if you guys like fantasy baseball in general, if you like prospects, go support Martin's Substack. Really good stuff there and see where it goes. And Joe G's already dropping a question we got queued up for later in the show. So we got you, Joe. Don't you worry about that, but keep them coming. If you are in the chat tonight, we'll take care of you there. But I guess just a general observation from the draft, Martin, because that's what one of the many things I love about having you like help us over at Bubba and the Bloom, but just hanging out on the Patreon is because you do know prospects. People go to you like with that. And you're always posting different, you know, tweets that a lot of us don't follow. You're following all these minor league things. So you're posting them in the proximate prospects section and stuff like that. But when this draft was going on, we're like, oh man, Luis Arraez goes to the Phillies. And then you're sitting there like, either you text me or you put it in the Discord like, yeah, you're going to like this kid. Or like, there's like, you say, so you give like other analysis besides that, but like, you were kind of keeping us like, okay, this one's actually a good mover. Oh wow, they gave like, wow, the Angels just gave away Chase Silseth. Like it's just all kinds of little weird transactions. But you're always the go-to in that deal. So when this was all said and done, when the dust settled, it was like 6 p.m. Eastern, and maybe a few more trades snuck in after the wire, like Casey Mize, and you started writing your labor of love here. What was kind of your overall takeaway from the prospect side of this trade deadline? Because like a handful of teams were heavy buyers, but then that means there is maybe in a way heavy buyers in the prospects from the other side.
Yeah, I think it was a lot more of the younger projectable players that got moved. A lot of the DSL pop-up guys. We're talking about guys like Gianmarco Reyes and, you know, Alexander Frias that went to the Cardinals and the Brewers in the Dustin May trade. Same thing with the other kid's name that was in there, the Josiah Ragsdale also went to the Cardinals in that trade. So guys like that, the pop-up guys really took off. And then obviously you had the big names that got moved. You had the Zaire Hopes and the Anthony Ionsons in those deals. And then you had some guys that had kind of tapered off, the Jonathan Longs of the world. And, you know, then there was the surprises, the Jefferson Rojas and, you know, the Desan Hills, things like that. So there was a lot of movement of guys that I necessarily wouldn't have expected to be moved. But at the same time, the cost of doing business is the cost of doing business. And some teams definitely took that to heart and made some people punt, you know, pay for their transactions and the guys they wanted to get, especially the Orioles. They completely slaughtered their division with these prospects that they acquired. So it was a good busy deadline. So
good to hear on that front. I guess last thing I'll mention, and maybe you can just say not really, were there any prospects you expected to be maybe dangled more that did not get traded? So I know we like, well, a lot of us look at like, you know, we thought Reed Detmers is going to get traded, or we thought so-and-so, and they didn't get traded from the big league level. Prospects is much harder. So like you, like I said, literally tell me no. But were there like any you're expecting, like new change of scenery would have done well? I'm surprised he didn't get moved.
Yeah, I thought maybe the Mets would consider dangling Jonah Tong. I know that they were more in the seller market than anything, but Tong has really been struggling a lot. He actually got lit up again tonight in AAA. He was a guy that I thought could potentially get moved as a change of scenery guy. James Tibbs, obviously, with the Dodgers, is a guy that is really blocked right now. I thought he would be a piece. I thought he'd be a piece in the Scooble trade, honestly, but obviously they went a different route with that. So those are a couple guys that I thought for sure would be moved and didn't get moved. So, but then there was guys like Jefferson Rojas that I never would have expected to get moved that did. So
beautiful. All right, so we're gonna go down the article here, and if it's a not important move, just tell me and we will move on from. But like I said, as I know, some of these, they might be low A guys, but they're guys we're keeping an eye on. And if anything, maybe give some optimism for the team that, you know, like I said, I was very excited when you would text me out of nowhere and go, this guy's actually really good. And you're like, he'll be fourth in your system. I had no clue who this guy was. So it was like, those are the kind of thing that this is for me and others. Maybe it's a lethargic thing. Plus people that play Dynasty can enjoy this. So just real quick, Dodgers got Seth Halverson. The Rockies got Nick Frasso and Landon. And I'm going to butcher so many names on this show, folks. So many. Just be prepared. Landon Viderek. Any relevance here? There's kind of like Seth Halverson shouldn't get a whole big pull.
No, it was interesting that Frasso got moved. He kind of has been off the radar for a while now because he had the torn labrum in 24 and then didn't really pitch much last year. And when he did, he came back in the bullpen instead of being a starter. I think there's some viability with him if they want to stretch him out again because the workload as a starter has been there in the past. But he is turning 28 this offseason. So it could be a situation where they just leave him in the bullpen. But, you know, with Colorado and their pitching, you just never know who they're going to plug in. So.
Yeah, Gabriel Hughes says, what's up? Curtis Mead for Connelly Early, like we kind of know how that one. We have a good feeling on both of those, but I guess I'll ask you this as a Red Sox fan. Maybe this is, you can take your prospect hat off if you like or keep it on. But as a Red Sox fan, like at the time it made sense. Okay, they got their right-handed bat they're looking for. It's kind of did we give up on Connelly Early too early? Obviously, Captain Hindsight now with the Mead injury could be a whole thing, but in the moment of the trade, how did you feel about giving up early in the situation?
Yeah, at first it was a little shock just because I wasn't expecting him to be a guy that they would move. I thought if they were going to move him, it'd be for a more, you know, established piece, like a, you know, they talked about moving him for Ketel Marte in the offseason, something like that. So it was surprising that Mead was the end result there. But at the same time, Early kind of took a step back a little bit this year. He started to nibble a lot more around the plate. Wasn't really attacking hitters the way he did previously. He was starting to miss a lot less bats. And the emergence of Jake Bennett really kind of opened the door for Early to be a guy that would be traded. And obviously they ended up dealing a couple more pitching prospects as well. But I think in the moment I was a little shocked, but at the end of the day, I like it. And then of course, Mead gets hurt, and it is what it is. So
yeah, you couldn't foresee that part, but yeah, it was one of those. I like it when it's a trade that you can look at on paper and go, okay, I see how this works for both sides. Mm-hmm. Like it was legit, like a move where, you know, no trade is ever going to be even, but it was close enough type thing. And then mm-hmm. that's how that trade felt. And you mentioned, like, if you have, it's kind of like how the Dodgers have so many prospects, you just start giving them up. And the Red Sox had, like you mentioned with Bennett, you joined me early in the season to talk, you know, the American League prospects for DCs, and Tolle was a big topic of conversation there. So they have options in the young side of things, and this was just another one of them. So glad to hear that side of it. We saw Chase Silseth and minor leaguer Logan Ohapi get traded for Angel Arenado. Ohapi is pretty much going to be trash unless he finds the fountain of youth. I'll do the catcher analysis for you there. Anything like this was the best because this was like the first trade, so everyone's thirsty for it, and everyone's asking you, who is this guy? And anything on Mr. Arenado?
No, nothing real exciting. I mean, obviously, the Angels traded for a guy named Angel, but beyond that, there's nothing really overly exciting about the prospect itself, so.
Yeah, and then Brewers and Guardians is Bo Naylor, Cody Hewer for Craig Yoho, Blake Perkins, really a major leaguer, so not a whole lot to talk about there except the minor league catcher, but I digress. Twins, Dean Kramer. The Orioles received, oh good God, Hamonardo Reyes. Oh, this is if you guys get have a drinking game on this show, you guys can have a lot of fun with this. What do you think about the return of Reyes for the Orioles? Because you mentioned, I know their big stockpile is going to come later on. We're going to talk about, but was Reyes a part of their building blocks?
Yeah, that's a really good get for them, considering that Kramer's been, I mean, he's been a serviceable pitcher, right? I mean, we've seen him do some things. He's gone on some strings. He threw the ball really well tonight, actually, for them, which is good. But Reyes is a guy that's one of those pop-up guys that really just kind of just broke out this year, right? He's only 18, but he's got that big body, 6'3", 185, projectable teenage frame. He's got really quick hands, excellent bat speed. This is a guy that's already doing some things with the EVs. I mean, he's got 107 mile an hour, 90th percentile. He's getting to the pole airside a lot. Still super young, but I think that he's definitely a guy that's got some potential and some upside. I think he's probably going to find his way inside the top 200 by the end of the season if he keeps going the way he is. So
nice. Yeah, super young. So that's good to see. Geez, 18 years old right now. And like you kind of mentioned at the start of the show there, it's a lot of like lower like a ball like kind of guys, a lot of youth, like really youth got traded. It's not 22 year olds, like teenagers got dealt this deadline. All right, let's start breaking down a biggie here. Obviously we know who Tarek Skubal is. He is on the West Side Evil Empire, and that means the Tigers got a haul. Depends on who you talk to. There's some like disgruntled people, some that love it. I'm like, yeah, it looks pretty nice to me. But Zaire Hope, obviously you thought Tibbs would go, but Zaire Hope goes. River Ryan has got the hamstring injury. He's like 28. And then Brady Smith, I've actually heard some people say, might be the best piece of this whole deal. I don't know. Like I said, I've heard every angle you can on this one. And it's kind of like, I guess, pick your battle. How do you think the Tigers did on this deal? I know nothing's going to equate to Tarek Skubal, but all things considered, how'd they do?
Yeah, without seeing the returns, I mean, I've seen a little bit about the Brewers and the things they offered, but I mean, I think it was a foregone conclusion that Skubal was going to end up in LA. I think he, you know, they basically said we're going as hard as we can for him, and there was very few teams that had the prospect, you know, pool to dip in that they did. And if the Brewers weren't willing to give up guys like Logan Henderson and, you know, maybe whoever, you know, Luis Peña, I heard was part of the deal, which it is what it is. But if they weren't willing to give up a pitcher that's major league ready, then it was pretty easily that it was going to go to the Dodgers. So I think that Scott Harris, the GM of the Tigers, did well to get the guys that he got, getting Zaire Hope, who's a legitimate prospect. I mean, talking to a guy that's top 40 easily, 65, you know, grade power, 60 grade speed, hits the ball really, really hard. Led the Southern League in RBIs this year with 87. I mean, even as a consensus top 50 prospect, he was still the fourth best outfielder prospect in their system, sixth best overall. He wasn't even the best player on his own team. Mike Sirota and Josue De Paula were both there as well. So Hope was a guy that made a lot of sense that he would get traded. I think his value now skyrockets even more in Dynasty, because I think that he's going to be up way sooner than he would have been before. We talk about the Dodgers and their prospects and how they block guys, and you know, guys like Dalton Rushing took forever to get there, and then Michael Bush didn't even end up there, and they do all this blocking of guys. Miguel Vargas is another one. I think Hope would have been blocked for a long time because he just wasn't at the same level as Sirota and DePaula. And this is a good opportunity for him. This is a guy that could realistically be up as early as opening day next year, probably not more mid-27, but it definitely escalated his ETA a lot. And he was the key piece of the deal. And I think the Tigers did just fine on that piece. River Ryan, it is what it is. There's an injury history. He's got limited pro innings because he was, you know, he had the injury with Tommy John. He also was transitioning from being a two-way player at one point, and so those innings didn't really accumulate. When he's been on, he's been pretty good. This year, he's really doing a good job of limiting the hard contact and getting the ground balls, but it's still 36 innings, and he's already hurt again. So I think the Tigers needed to get a major league quality pitcher. I think Ryan is that, but I think that the helium around his name is probably a little high, considering that he really hasn't done a lot. And then you talked about Brady Smith. That's a, you know, young kid, 21. He had Tommy John surgery in 23 and missed all of 2024. barely pitched last year, but this year he's been really good. He's averaging 14 strikeouts per nine. He's got a really good four-pitch mix with the changeup being his primary put away. I just moved him inside my top 400, but I've got a feeling when the Tigers get their hands on him, this is going to be a kid that's going to be probably a mid-rotation starter for them if they can get everything worked out with him. So really good piece. And overall, I'd give the Tigers probably – I'd give them a B for what they got for Skubal.
Yeah, all things considered, after listening to you talk, like if there's a chance that River Ryan can stay healthy – they could get all three guys up to the bigs at some point, maybe by 2028, because you think Brady Smith's probably a couple years away, maybe, or is he maybe next year?
He's still a couple years away. He's only 21, but he's also had the injury history, and he really needs to get stretched out more. This is the most innings he's thrown in his pro career. So
yeah, I'd say 28, 29, you can potentially get all three of these guys. It's not bad considering you weren't going to keep Skubal. And that's like, I know I'm not the Tigers fan. I'd be depressed if you lost him, but you got to look at the big picture. I remember when the Giants had Blake Snell and we could have traded him. We knew he wasn't coming back. He didn't come back. We got nothing. So it's one of those, like, if you're not going to win at all, now that's the whole other conversation for a whole other podcast on the Tiger side of it there. But if you are going to get rid of Skubal, at least you got three potential guys that you will see on your roster at one point in time, which a lot of these trades will never happen.
You got two top 100 prospects and a guy that's highly projectable. I think that's a win. If you wouldn't have traded him and you just, you know, let him rot and only get the comp pick for him, then GMs are losing jobs. So,
yep. So that's why you got to look at the big picture as much as that may sting. All right. The Braves traded Lane Thomas and Bailey Falter, got Lane Thomas and Bailey Falter from the Royals. They traded Lucas Braun and Carter Holton. I heard some people, unless I misheard, kind of excited on Lucas Braun. Anything we should like about the Royals' return from the Braves?
Yeah, he's a solid pitcher. He's not a guy that's going to get a ton of strikeouts, but the command is really good. He throws six different pitches over 10% of the time, so he's got a whole kitchen sink of stuff. Nothing really jumps off the page as far as, you know, outlier movement, outlier, you know, whiffs or anything like that, but the combination of his command, the deep arsenal and throwing strikes, he's probably going to be a guy that's going to be a back end rotation guy or possibly a bulk reliever. So really good pitcher. I saw him live about a month ago. He looked pretty solid. So I think that he'll definitely impact the Royals at some point, maybe this year, but definitely next year.
Beautiful. All right. One thing I noticed year after year, and they do it with some of the same players they acquire, but they make it work. The Nationals front office knows how to build a team through the trade deadline. Like, they have been very, very good about this. Like, I know people have dissected it a ton, but like Luis Garcia, you have CJ Abrams and James Wood, obviously, in the Soto deal. Mackenzie Gore was once there. Mackenzie Gore gets flipped. Some players came back there that have been serviceable. Kyber Ruiz, like, love or hate him, he's been sort of like, they're big league players. They're getting back, is my point, when they're young. And they did it again this time. Again, maybe not all the flashiest of names. But they essentially built their bullpen for 2027 if they want to, in a weird way, in this deal. I'm not going to steal all the analysis, but like I did listen to a couple not even prospect-related shows, but that was the comments I heard. So you could totally tell me if I'm wrong, but Luis Garcia to the Yankees, Jake Bird, who we've heard of before, but Ben Grable, Yordani Cruz, Jack Siebert. I heard Siebert. Cruz might be a closer of the future. Cruz, what's your thoughts on this return for the Nationals?
Yeah, they continue to just find talent and get the most out of their trades. Like you mentioned, the Gore trade, that was a big, big push for them. If you look at the fact that they got Devin Fitzgerald, who's there, they got Gavin Fien, they got Abimelech Ortiz in that trade. I mean, it's looking good. Also, Alejandro Rosario. So they really loaded up their system in that deal alone. This one is a little bit less impactful. I do really like Jack Siebert. He's 24 years old. He was a collegiate pitcher at South Florida and Texas Tech. He really popped last year in his debut. He had 11 strikeouts in six innings following the draft, which is a pretty good way to stand out. This year, it's been more of the same. It's 27% strikeout rate, 7% walk rate. He's got really good command of his stuff, and he really racks up enough whiffs to stick as a, you know, back end rotation starter. He's a guy that's, you know, he's inside my top 400 prospects. And I think that he's a guy kind of similar to, you know, how they keep going with these, you know, at one point they had Jake Bennett, they traded Jake Bennett, but now they just you know, acquired Connolly early. They've got Siebert. You know, Rosario is going to be back at some point. I mean, they're quietly building up this depth, you know, and then they've got their two stud prospects on top of it, Sikora and Susana. So the Nationals just keep doing this. And I really like Luis Garcia as a player. And even though the return isn't overly impactful as far as, you know, fantasy value, the real life value they're getting with these bullpen arms is really nice. So yeah, they did a great job on this trade.
Yeah, they're impressive for a team that doesn't want to spend money. Like, they've actually built almost a contender just by their trades over like the last 5 years. Like, yeah. It's pretty wild to sit back and watch. Yeah. All right, Kevin Gausman, Cubs were busy and they made some nice moves also to kind of bolster the rotation and their bullpen. This was one of them. Kevin Gausman to the Cubs. Blue Jays got Ty Southesine and Brett Bateman. I got that one. Anything to get excited about on these two?
Yeah, so Southesine's a name that is probably going to stand out to people. This is not the Braves breakout prospect, Tate Southesine. This is the older brother. Still a good bat, 306 average right now in high A with 31 steals. Not really any fantasy juice as far as power goes, but the speed is definitely there. He's got enough bat that's going to keep him in the lineup with the contact skills, and then obviously he's going to run a lot. If he comes into any power at all, we're talking about a guy that could potentially be a leadoff hitter. But right now, I think it's a lot of speed and contact in the profile. If nothing changes, I think he's probably a utility guy. But if the power comes, we're talking about a guy that could be a major league regular. So
beautiful. Good to know. And the Jays are going to need something these days. It's kind of bleak up there at the moment. Yeah. Philadelphia Phillies, they found their power hitting cleanup hitter in Luis Arraez. I half being sarcastic right now. It's hilarious. He went deep on Wednesday for those sleeping under a rock. The Giants received Ramon Marquez and Marty Gare. And please tell me why I should be very excited about one Ramon Marquez.
Well, this kid's special. This kid's very special. He's one of the top prospects in their system and immediately becomes probably the number two pitching prospect in your system behind Jackson Flora. 26. He's got 1.68 ERA with 14 Ks per nine. It's a 41.9% strikeout rate, sub 9% walk rate. Hitters, listen to this. Hitters have 12 extra base hits in 59 innings, 145, 230, 235 slash line against this kid. Since he's gone up to high A, 47% whiff rate, 23% swinging strike rate. The changeup is absolutely filthy, one of the best in the minor leagues. He's getting whiff rates north of 60% on that pitch alone. This kid is really, really special, and I think that there's still more in the tank. He's 6'2", 180. He could build a little muscle on. This is good. This is a great trade for both teams, honestly, because the Phillies really needed that extra bat to kind of fill out that lineup. This is a win-win. So
awesome. Yeah, that was the one consensus thing. Not about Marquez, just that we'll talk more trades, obviously, but the Giants, the biggest thing they did is they just reloaded the pitching in the farm system, which needed to do badly. So again, it's kind of how I talked about the Tigers returning from Scooble. Like, if you sit back, like, obviously the Giants weren't in any chance to make the playoffs, but it's like, okay, let's see what we can do. And I think Buster kind of cooked around. Like, I'll let this one go for now because it's been a frustrating year, but it's one of those, okay, let's start thinking about, you know, the next 2 years or so, and we might be in the right direction, it feels like. Yep. All right, the Rays received Freddie Peralta. They might be second-guessing that after Tuesday, but they received Freddie Peralta. The Mets received Aiden Smith, Gary. I love this one because I had to, like, triple-check it when I wrote it up the other night. Gary Gill-Hill. I feel like I'm watching King of the Hill with something like this. Gary Gill-Hill and Emiline Petre. What should we be expecting? Because the Rays, not quite like the Dodgers, but similar, have such a deep farm system. Like, they have to trade guys half the time.
Yeah, they do, and this deal was – interesting because Aiden Smith is a guy that I saw last year in the AFL, and he was super, super impressive when he was with the Mariners. And then he got traded to the Mets, and I can't remember the deal right now, but he went over to the Mets, or the, I'm sorry, to the Rays. Oh, it was the Randy Rosarena trade. And he just tanked, completely tanked. I mean, the swing and strike rate is obnoxious. He can't hit anything. When he does make contact, it goes a long way. He runs really well. He's a decent outfielder, but he's kind of been a bust, to be honest with you. He was a guy that at one point I think I had in the top 50. Now he's outside my top 400. Gil Hill, really good debut as a 19-year-old in 2024, but the stuff just really hasn't come back. and he's kind of just a fringe major league arm at this point. And Petre is a guy that's kind of interesting. He's got a pretty good hit tool and really good plate discipline. He also runs pretty well, you know, too. So he might actually be the best player in the trade. But if the Rays can fix Peralta, this trade is going to be heavily lopsided in their favor, of course, because that's how they do, right?
Yep, that is exactly what they do. And the way the Mets year is going, that's what the Mets do as well. So, yeah, I'm curious. I've made the joke on other shows. I'm like, yeah, Freddie Peralta, you get your first two starts at Coors and at the Dodgers. But after that, we'll work with you. So just, I guess, hang on for real life Rays fans. Blue Jays, they picked up Jose Soriano. They kind of shocked everybody Monday morning by getting Soriano, but it made sense because Soriano's got club control for, I believe, through 2028, which helps a bit. The Angels received Arjun Nimala, Eddie Micheletti, and Angel Rivera. Good Lord, could you pick a better three? What are we thinking on the Angels return here from the Blue Jays?
So this is the guy that really shocked me. Arjun Nimala moving. The Jays have been through some stuff with this kid. So he was the 20th overall pick in 23. He was really, really, he's super toolsy, five-tool guy, one of the toolsiest prospects in baseball. But he struggled really bad in 24. They ended up putting him on the DEV list and sending him to the complex. He bounced back and crushed over the last couple months there. Then they kind of slow played him and they slow played him and they slow played him. He just got to Double A this year. And granted, he's still 20, but this is a kid that's starting to finally put it together. And this is a rare win for the Angels here because they don't usually win on things like this. But Nimala is a legit top 50 prospect. And honestly, he's probably got top 10 upside if everything clicks. He's starting to figure it out. The power's there. He's got the hit tool figured out. He's getting on base a lot. He's a good defender. I'm going to make a bold prediction on this show. He will be the Angels opening day shortstop next year, and Zach Neto will get traded this offseason because the Angels are aggressive with their prospects. This is a kid that's got the tools to be a major leaguer, and I think they're just going to rush him. I think they're going to push him up, and I think he's going to succeed. He's going to be a star at some point. So
there you go. I should probably get used to saying it then. Arjun Nimala is the one Martin's talking about there. Mm-hmm. I remember you mentioning a little bit about that in the Discord as well, but they were trying to trade Neto, so I think it's a great point. They got a lot more rebuilding to do than just what they did this past week. If you can get Neto in the offseason and like get dangle like, hey, you get the full year plus some others with them, that might bring something back. That's interesting to see how that one plays out. The Angels made another trade. They sent Joe Adell to the Guardians for Jacob Cozart. Anything to get too excited about there?
Not really. Cozart's kind of like the typical Guardians prospect. Glove first, really good defender, pretty mediocre bat. So I think ultimately
it's in Anaheim. Good.
Yeah, they've got a billion. Yeah, they've got, you know, always have a billion catchers in their system. So getting rid of Cozart isn't a big deal. So.
All right. White Sox got Britton Doyle, the platoon with Tristan Peters, most likely. The Rockies got Mason Adams and Carlos Vilma in return. Anything to get excited about on that one?
Kind of. Adams is it's a weird fit to put Adams in Colorado because he's got a really good feel for spin, but we know that spin doesn't necessarily translate well in Coors. But at the same time, he's got a 55% ground ball rate. He throws a ton of pitches for strikes, gets a lot of contact, doesn't miss a lot of bats. So it's like some good and some bad, but he's a guy that's probably going to be in the rotation next year because they just don't have a lot to put in the rotation, and he's already 26. So I think that if you're a dynasty owner and you owned Adams, you're probably disappointed with where he ended up. But if you're a fantasy guy, he's a guy that you can put in a draft and hold next year and see how it all plays out.
Beautiful. Rays, sorry, what was, oh yes, yes, you are.
Speaking your language.
Yep. Rays acquired Liam Hicks, hit a grand slam in his debut in Coors. Marlins acquired Braden Taylor, Adrian Santana, and Jacob Kisting in return. Again, Rays usually have depth, but we'll see how this works. What are your thoughts on those three that return to Miami?
Yeah, Taylor was a guy that we had a discussion about in the Discord the other day. He was a former, you know, first round pick out of TCU. He really hasn't developed as well as they anticipated. He has been better this year, but he's also 24 and he's in Double A for the third time. So I'm a little skeptical on that. He still has a sub 80% contact rate. He's kind of like in the same mold as Aiden Smith, where there was a lot of potential upside there and it just doesn't always click. Still pretty skeptical of the breakout. He's another guy that was in the AFL last year and I saw them together and I was like, these guys suck, like they're just not good. But he is performing better, so we'll see if maybe he did some stuff with a swing, they said, so we'll see. Santana, kind of young, more of a utility infield type guy. Kisting is interesting. He's 6'5", real big kid, dominated at high A this year. Strikeout rate or K minus walk rate of 23%. I think there's some intrigue there just based on his size and the way he throws strikes and things like that. But there's still a lot of question marks on how the stuff will play up at the next level. So ultimately it's probably another Rays steal. So
yeah, that's what they do. All right, another Giants move here. They sent Robbie Ray to the Padres. Padres got quite active at the end of the trade deadline there. The Giants got Yoniel Hernandez and Miguel Mendez in return from the Padres. Anything to get pumped up on here?
Yeah, I still don't understand why the Padres think they're good, because they're not good. Yep. But anyways, and they gave up. They don't have a deep prospect pool. We know this. They've got Ethan Salas, but he was untouchable. But they did give up Miguel Mendez here. I like Miguel Mendez a lot. I think there's a lot of upside here. He missed a lot of bats earlier in his career, but that's kind of dipped as he's gotten the higher levels. But there's really good stuff. Mid-90s fastball, the slider is good. The changeup is good. I'm a little worried about his size. He's pretty thin. He's 6'2", 170, so he needs to bulk up a little bit. Hopefully they can make that work. And if they get the command figured out, this is a guy that could be a back-end starter, but most likely probably a mid-relief to high-leverage guy if he can get it all figured out. Yoniel Hernandez, this is fun. This is a 17-year-old kid with the, with that projectable body. He just signed for $1.4 million this past J15 class in January. Feels like a lot like the Luis Hernandez and Josuar Gonzalez guys they already have in the pipeline. These are young teenage kids with big bodies, lots of tools. I think that he is quietly awesome move by Posey to get him in this deal. I think if those three guys, if he can get two of the three of them to pan out, this is a very special group of teenagers. So another win for Buster Posey. The Giants definitely cooked this trade deadline. Yes, and I'm not just saying that because you're here.
Yeah, no, that is one thing I've noticed. Many have said that, even a lot of publications in the Bay Area that have bombed on Posey this year have thrown some flowers his direction on this one, because his first trade was Devers, and there's still a lot of questions because all of a sudden Harrison, I don't have to relive it all, but a lot of Captain Hindsight's, of course, on that right now.
Oh, yeah.
They're pretty happy on so far what's going on there. I got to get to San Jose because those boys are in San Jose right now. And and I say boys because they are kids. I need to go check them out before they literally be
our kids. Yeah.
Yes, that's the scary part. Which it just takes me back to why I'm angry. Like San Jose, I loved it because it used to be high A, so you had time to react. Now it's low A, and like literally, if they keep hitting, they aren't going to be there very much longer. They don't stick around. Like every good player that goes through there does not stick around very long. Which is at least San Jose, I get them for at least half a year usually. Now it's a little different. All right, Chris Bubich goes to the Dodgers. Carlos Duran, I doubt, has a lot. Maybe I'm wrong. What do you got?
I think there's a little bit more there with Duran. I know the numbers haven't been great because the walk rate's kind of high, but talking about a pretty good fastball, pretty good sinker. They both have really good outlier movement on them, some really good IVB. The sinker has a lot of horizontal movement, a lot of, depth. So that's interesting. The slider's been really good as well. High spin rates, big whiffs, 44% whiffs on that. Changeup's been good as well. I know he's 25. I know he's been in the, hiding in the Dodger system, but this is a guy that's got some skills to be a high leverage arm. And we all know how the bullpen goes in Kansas City right now. So there's a chance that Duran becomes a high leverage guy in that system. So I keep an eye on him.
All right. Good to know. Cause usually some of those kind of like smaller deals just kind of get pushed aside. So good to see. Yeah. If you want to vent, you can vent. If you want, whatever you want to do on this one, maybe you love it. Maybe you don't. I don't know. I really don't, but we have a catcher's trade. That's the way I'm going to phrase it. Red Sox and Orioles. Red Sox received Adley Rutschman and Jake Rogers. They got two catchers.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. I had to get excited here. Orioles received Anthony Tyson. There you go. Tyson Witherspoon, Indy Azakar, and another catcher, Carlos Narvaez. I just saw the Orioles had a pulse. The floor is yours on this one because you kind of hinted at it earlier in the show. I think things went pretty well for the O's in this one.
It was a good trade. I think it's a good trade for both teams. I think that even though Adley is seeing a little bit of up and down in the production, we're still looking at a kid that's 28, that's a three-time All-Star, that's, really good plate discipline. obviously a leader of men. The clubhouse reaction was kind of said it all about what they're losing in that clubhouse. So I think the Red Sox haven't had a franchise catcher since Jason Veritek. I thought Kyle Teal was going to be that guy, and then they traded him for Garrett Crochet, which is fine. Rutschman now comes in and he's kind of the guy there, and I'm good with it as long as they extend him. If they don't extend him, it could get really ugly. But yeah, so Ianson kind of was the forgotten guy in the class last year. He was at LSU and had some good stuff there, but started to really pick up the velo at the end, and he just come out and been a complete monster this year. He was at high A to start the year. He had a 0.44 ERA in 20 and a third innings. Overall on the season, 1.32 ERA, 26.5% K minus walk rate. He's got plus command, easily repeatable mechanics. He's just a really solid pitcher. He's got three pitches that are plus or better. This is the big piece in the deal. Where the deal could go crazy is if Kyson Witherspoon turns into something. So Witherspoon was the 15th overall pick last year. He didn't debut after the draft, which I thought was kind of odd. He only threw 96 innings at Oklahoma, but it didn't debut after the draft, and then came out this year and has just been brutal. The command has been terrible. He's walking a lot of guys. He's getting hit hard. The velo on the fastball has been pretty good, which we knew, but there's always concerns about the shape. I'm not going to be Nick Pollock and talk about the shape too much, but I know that's been a concern. But the secondaries are pretty good. He's still missing bats at a 14% clip, but he really hasn't become what he should have been, considering that he was a collegiate arm that was already a finished product, quote unquote, coming into the majors or coming into the pros. So if Witherspoon turns into a second potential ace, then I think it gets a little skewed toward Baltimore. Andy Azokar, projectable kid, teenager still, good power, but he's also trading out a lot of the hit tool for power, which isn't good because now his contact rates have dipped quite a bit. He's managed to cut the ground ball rate, which obviously means more fly balls. He's pulling the ball a lot more, but the EVs, and the EVs are good, but the contact rates are way, way down. So now the hit tool went from above average to fringy, and that's going to be a concern. So I think that there's projection there in Azokar, but I think the trade isn't as bad as Red Sox fans want it to be. I think that they see the name value and they think, oh gosh, we just gave up three of our top eight prospects. But when you really look at what you're getting back, there's a cost of doing business, and there's a cost of doing business within your own division. And I think that they made the move they needed to make now, and we'll see how it pans out in the future.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because it's kind of one thing I always remember is, yeah, people will report trades and say, oh, it's the third, sixth, and eighth prospect or whatever in a farm system. Not all farm systems are created equal. So if you tell me the third, sixth, and eighth of the Padres, I'd be terrified, because it's just empty.
Oh, God, yeah.
If you tell me like third, sixth, and eighth, and let's say the Dodgers, okay. This is good. We got something here. So not all things are created equal, and we just got to keep that in mind. Yeah. All right, next up we have the this one was interesting. This is kind of, you mentioned Jonathan Long earlier. This is kind of maybe change the scenery. He's going to help a few people here. Cubs get Braxton Garrett. Marlins would never pitch him for some reason. Now, might be more blocked in Chicago. I'll let you hit on that if you want to. But then Jonathan Long, Jace Beck head back to Miami. So kind of a, hey, we got no use for these guys. Let's like throw it at each other and see if it helps. I don't know. What were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think the Garrett thing is kind of odd, because he didn't pitch well when he came up, but then he was kind of dominating in AAA, and they just never would go to him. I knew that they wanted to go to Robbie Snelling at some point, and they did, and ultimately he got hurt, but they never went to Garrett after that. And so there was just kind of the writing on the wall that Garrett wasn't going to be a part of their future. So Jonathan Long is an interesting guy. This is a kid that's been hitting very well in the minors. The last two seasons, he's been over 280 with at least 17 home runs in each season. The power is down a little bit as far as metrics go, but he's still at 283 with 12 homers at AAA. I think the question for him right now is, what's his path to playing time? Obviously, they just called up your guy, the Goose, again. You know, we've got Owen Casey there. You know, they've got Joe Mack, who could potentially play some first base as well. They've got some guys that are just kind of rotating around. So I'd like to see him get some time. I think the question for me is how the power is going to play. He doesn't pull the ball a ton, but the power itself, like the numbers indicate that he could hit, you know, hit for power still, even if he's spraying the ball over the park. And then he's got some problems with spin, specifically sliders. He's got a 40% whiff rating in sliders, but he hammers everything else. Fastballs he hammers, curveballs he hammers, changeups pretty good against those too. So it's a nice change of scenery. He wasn't going to get playing time in Chicago. They made that obvious. So I really like this, and I think that Long could be a guy that maybe their opening day first baseman next year if things play out the way that they could. So
very interesting. Yeah, Marlins have a ton of outfield targets with some first base flexibility and kind of clogs things up. That's why I don't even know what Goose is going to do. They want him to catch. They want him to play first base, but Joe Mack's holding that bad boy down. So is Kyle Towers right now. It's going to be tricky. Oh, yeah. Pirates received Luke Weaver, their potential future closer, for Sammy. The Mets got Sammy Stafura. Any interest in Sammy?
A little bit. So this is a kid that never really did much. The tools were kind of always there, but he was always hitting the ball on the ground and wasn't doing a lot of power work. It was kind of like some swing and miss and a lot of hard ground balls and things like that. But this year he's kind of found the power a little bit in the, you know, the hit tool is still below average, but he's already got 20 homers and 20 steals. But there's also a 30% strikeout rate with it. So he's popped off a lot lately because he's been on a bit of a heater. I think it's a fine trade ultimately, but this is the second time he's been traded in the last 12 months. So there's something there too. I think it's a good trade for the Pirates though, because they got a closer in Luke Weaver and they really just gave up a kid that they just kind of pushed and made interesting that still has some underlying concerns. So
nice. All right, Brewers, they got Dustin May and JoJo Romero from the Cardinals. Cardinals got Josiah Ragsdale and Alexander Frias. You mentioned Ragsdale earlier in the show, right? He had a home run in his debut in the minor leagues for the Cards today. And I know Matt Thompson was pretty pumped on this return. So what are your thoughts on what the Cardinals got back for Dustin May and JoJo Romero?
Oh, yeah, this is a monster trade. The Cardinals just raked in this deal. Ragsdale's a guy that's already – he just popped off this year. I mean, his first year as a pro, he's already inside the top 100 for me. I mean, he just does everything well. He's got all the tools. He's got the physical, you know, the physical size. He's got the chance to potentially grow a little bit even more. You know, he's doing really well with his finding the barrel. The power is there. The speed is there. He's got a sub 35% ground ball rate, so he's getting the ball in the air. I mean, he's aggressive on the bases. He does everything that you want to see. And honestly, this is a kid that has already climbed three levels this year. Don't be surprised if he's getting some helium in spring to make this roster next year. And then Frias is a pop-up guy from the complex. He's already a borderline top 100 guy as well. Massive power. Already had a 117 max EV in the complex. He's just turned 18 in March, so he's still a little raw, still too many ground balls. But again, big frame, lots of projection. This is a huge, huge deal for the Cardinals.
That's good to hear. Cardinals need some power, that's for sure. So that's a nice welcome addition. Surprised Burleson didn't go, but we'll talk Newt in a minute. Cubs, Ryan Zephyrjohn. This is like a quietly – I like teams in contention. He's the kind of guy – move I actually kind of like as a diehard baseball guy. A nut is – Zephyrjohn is going to be huge in the seventh and eighth for the Cubs, and he already has been. But I love the flip side of this deal. Don't know much about Mason McGuire. Feel free to fill me in there. But Moises Ballesteros has been freed from Chicago. And I say this because the only prospects I have a rough clue on are the AL West for my HQ work, because I have to dig in on them. And when I look at the Angels system, if you look at the catcher's position, I don't care how bad defensively you are, they have nobody, at least not near the top at this point in time, unless I'm completely clueless at this time. We love the bat from Moises. They've already said he's going to DH and catch in almost every series, so he's going to at least get some reps in. And then the last thing I have, and it's all yours, because I wrote about him actually, that came out today, Wednesday, at HQ. Ballesteros, when the Cubs sent him back to AAA, played like 35 games or something. Basically half of them he caught. So he wasn't just strictly DH like he was with the Cubs, which to me was a good sign for at least trying to make a kid player better. I could be just fool's golding this, and you could tell me I'm completely wrong. But what's your thoughts on this Ballesteros McGuire return for the Angels?
Yeah, I think it's a win-win for both teams. Zephyrjohn's really nasty, and he's going to be a good piece in that bullpen for the playoffs. But Ballesteros, I'm glad he finally got out of Chicago. He didn't perform poorly when he was in the majors. He doesn't have a defensive home. I mean, he could be a catcher. Ultimately, he probably will catch in Anaheim because they're just not good. And you know, Logan Ohapi wasn't exactly a great defensive catcher either. Ballesteros is a guy that'll either catch or DH. He's going to play regularly and he's going to rake. So I'm excited. I know you are too. Mason McGuire, the name is what you think it is. It's Mark McGuire's son.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you see the picture, you'll see him right away. Big, got the red hair and all that good stuff. So another big kid too, 6'4". But yeah, so he's going, you know, back out west where he played high school baseball and grew up, and he's had some injury problems. He had debuted in the complex in 2023, but he was bad for two seasons in a row. And then last year he hurt his elbow and didn't pitch at all. This year he's kind of polishing things up a little bit. The walk rate's down below 10%, which wasn't good before. It was in the, you know, the 15, 16, 17 range, you know, the first two seasons. He's missing bats a lot as well. Good feel for spin. The curveball's plus. The slider and the changeup are both good. The fastball is outstanding. Talking about 18 inches of IVB, he's routinely hitting triple digits with it. So there's a lot of upside there in this deal. I think it's a great trade for both sides, and I'm really excited that Ballesteros is going to play every day. I texted our friend Scott Burks about it, and I said, be happy that Moises is coming because he can rake. So
they need that when, like, Nolan Chanwell continued at second and third, like, yeah, and they got rid of Soler and the DFA'd Soler. They traded Adele. Like, most of their power has left the building. So, nice. At least Moises should play, which is what I'm excited to see. Red Sox received Eric Miller, similar to the Zephyr John. Great move, I think, for the Red Sox to add that bullpen lefty back there. And a change of scenery again. Marcelo Meyer coming to the Giants. I'm actually excited to see how this plays out. I know health has been the biggest issue for Meyer, at least from my vantage point. You've gotten a much deeper vantage point of what's going on there. But how do you think this move plays out?
Yeah, it was kind of a shocker that it was like they reported that they were dangling him, and like half an hour later he was gone. So, but yeah, Meyer just didn't work out in Boston. I don't know what it was. He was never really healthy in the minor leagues, and then when he did get healthy, he raked and immediately got called up and then was hurt again. There's a lot of talk about some maturity issues with the partying and things like that, which it sounds like it's legit. I mean, all the sources have said that it is. So maybe there's a little underlying maturity issue there as well. But ultimately, he's going back home. He's from California. He's still got talent. He just needs to stay healthy. And maybe he can just get out of the spotlight in Boston because he's, you know, been their top prospect for years and years and years. And he was always the guy that couldn't be touched and couldn't be moved. And now he's gone for a middle reliever. And so maybe this is a chance for him to kind of become what he can become. And he's a great defender. I think that if it all works out, he's probably a major league all-star, but he's just got to get the bat figured out first.
Where do you think is his best position? Because I know he's like floated between second and third.
Yeah, I actually think he'll be best as a shortstop. I think he's a plus defender at short. Obviously they've got Adames there. I don't foresee that being, you know, obviously Chapman's good at third base as well. So I think he'll probably end up playing second base in the interim. But long-term, I still think he's a really good shortstop. So.
And if he likes to party, I heard the scooters in the Marina District are pretty cool, according to Harrison Bader. So he's got that going for him. All right. Astros and Blue Jays made I see these are the kind of trades that at least I can understand the value going back and forth. Yeah. Dalton Varsho to the Astros. The dude's already hit middle of the order. Defense is great. Stole a bag on. But you know what you're getting with Dalton Varsho. It's health. Spencer Arrighetti going back is interesting because we already saw Jose Soriano, controllable asset in the rotation. Arrighetti goes back because we know they traded Gossman and kind of, and like there's openings. Scherzer's not going to be much longer in this rotation. So anything on this, like they're really not prospects anymore, but pretty, I think this helps both teams quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, I think it helps both teams as well. Arrighetti has kind of been inconsistent, but at the same time, Varsho has too. But yeah, I think it's a nice trade for both sides. I think it helps both of them. And Toronto really did have a pretty good deadline, considering the situation they were in and the different pieces they were able to unload. So yeah, it's a good trade overall.
All right. Cubs acquired Clay Holmes and Tyrone Taylor from the Mets for Jefferson Rojas. I hope Mets fans are hoping Rojas is pretty good.
Rojas is very good. Yeah, so 21 years old, middle infielder, probably going to be a second baseman long term, but he could play short if they decide to move on, away from Francisco Lindor. Really advanced plate skills, really good bat to ball, good swing decisions. Power is starting to tick up as well against better caliber pitching. He's got 15 homers and 17 steals this year at AA. Above average speed. If he wants to get a little bit more aggressive on the bases, I think he's a 20-25 guy at some point. And I'm just really shocked that this is what the Cubs gave up for Clay Holmes. I mean, nothing against Clay Holmes, but this is a special prospect, and I was really surprised that this was the guy that would go. I thought maybe they'd move Pedro Ramirez or even Matt Shaw, but Rojas is now a Met, and it's a good spot, and it's a great, great trade for the Mets.
Good to hear, because Mets Nation is crumbling these days.
Oh, yeah.
The Rays acquired Tyler Wells, another back end bullpen arm to, you know, help Baker out. He's just ridiculous. For Michael Ferret, anything of substance there?
Yeah, so Ferret's really, really good. Actually, last year he was one of the best pitchers in the minors on an inning by inning basis, but he's had some issues with workload. They haven't really pushed him very hard. This year he's already at 93 innings, which will be the most he's going to throw at any point in his career. He'll go over 100. Arsenal's really deep. He's got like 7 pitches that he throws. He commands them all well. The walk rate's been up a little bit this year, but for the most part, he's a really solid, probably SP3 or SP4 in a major league rotation. They just need to get the workload stretched out a little bit, and the Orioles will do that for him.
Yeah, and the Orioles, yeah, they can need some more rotation help. It's dwindling right now. Yankees, they got Elliot Ramos from the Giants. I guess it's one of those where I understood it. I didn't like it, but I understood it. They got Henry Lalanne and Caden Kent. Yes, Jeff Kent, a relative of Jeff Kent. I think it was his son or
the son. Yep.
Yeah, another one. But Lalanne's the name I'm supposed to know, I believe. What's our thoughts on this return for the Giants?
Yes, I love Henry Lalanne. 6'7", left-hander.
Lalanne. I was so close.
It's okay. You're good. Nasty in his debut in 23, just completely annihilated the complex. But then he's had some arm problems the last couple of years, only thrown 30 innings total the last two seasons. He's back this year, 31% strikeout rate. The command is actually improved since he's been down to the strike or the walk rate's under 10%. I'm talking about big extension, premium stuff, mid-90s fastball, changeups elite, the sweepers elite, 17% strikeout rate, swinging strike rate, sorry, at low A, and 37% whiff rate overall. This is a massive upside play, and if he stays healthy, he's a guy that could fast track to the big leagues pretty quickly. He could easily be on that quick path. Caden Kent, I think, is more of a sentimental throw in here. Good baseball instincts, good hit tool. The power's actually come a little bit more than I thought it would this year. But I don't think there's a lot of upside here. I think it's just, you know, name value and things like that. I think he'll be a decent prospect. I don't know if he'll ever become a major leaguer.
That'll happen. Just make was it Lalanne? How'd you say it?
Lalanne. Yep.
Lalanne. Okay. I was close. It's almost like,
yeah, you're fine.
Lalanne. I got it. Twins got Jeff Hoppin, another one of those late in arms that could help quite a bit. In return, the Blue Jays received Dayson Hill. Thank you. John Klein and Demary Pena. Anything of interest here for the Jays return?
Yeah. So this is another reason that they did well at the deadline. Dayson Hill's really electric. He's a big, big kid, 6'5", but he's super, super skinny. He's like 180 pounds. But we're talking about 100 mile an hour fastball, big slider, big changeup, really good elite SP1 type stuff. But the walk rate has been obnoxious. He's like 18% this year. It's not good, but he's also got a 36% strikeout rate. So misses plenty of bats, gets plenty of chase. If the command becomes league average, even, he's an elite starting pitching prospect. And they've got two guys now in that system. If you include Johnny King, two lefties that are, you know, highly projectable and potential future aces if they get it all straightened out.
All right, a couple more to go here. The Guardians received Foster Griffin, Nationals Will Dion, Josh Hartle, Kendalys Vergez, and Nick Mitchell. So another four pack, like quantity for the Nationals. Anybody that stands out as a potential impact for the Nets?
So I'm going to look into this Verghese kid because I've never actually heard of him before. So I'm going to look into him and see if he's worth a squat. But for me, it's Josh Hartle right now. He's 6'6", big left-hander. He's already in double A. He's not a big strikeout guy, but he's got a lot of deception. He gets a lot of ground balls, 55, 56% ground ball rate. Potentially a back-end starter. They've already talked about him being part of the Guardians bullpen at the end of this year. So maybe he comes up and becomes part of the bullpen in DC as well. But I think he's a guy that could potentially stick in the back end of a rotation if he can make some tweaks and maybe miss some more bats.
Beautiful. Tigers, Jackson Wolf and Cash Mayfield for Cage Workman and Casey Mize of the Padres. Casey Mize got absolutely crushed in his Padres debut. My God, I'll give you that. Eight earned runs over 3 1/3 innings. That's not going to do it, folks. But what about this return for the Tigers and Jackson Wolf and Cash Mayfield?
Yeah, so Mayfield's their best pitching prospect to this point, and now he's gone. So they basically just have Ethan Salas left there. But Mayfield's another big kid, 6'4", 200. Definitely got the frame for a starter's workload. There's some concerns about some velo. It's kind of been inconsistent, anywhere from 92 to 94 with the fastball. The changeup is elite. The slider's shown, potentially be plus as well. There needs to be some improved command and more consistency overall, but he's a borderline top 100 prospect and a guy that's probably going to be a SP3, SP4 in the majors. So it's a good trade for the Tigers considering. And don't sleep on Gage Workman too, fantasy people. Yeah. Gage Workman's got some skills.
Yeah, I'm a Workman fan. He got short run there in Detroit for obvious reasons. They had other players there, but very, very encouraged to see what he could do because San Diego's old. They got guys signed forever, but there's going to be a lot of injuries coming the next few years where these young kids are going to have to come up and play. Or he gets traded next year because that's what they do. Yeah. Diamondbacks, last one here. Lars Nootbaar to the D-backs. Cardinals got Daniel Egan in return. And I know that's another one. Thompson was like, wow, that's more than I thought we were going to get.
Yeah. Nootbaar has been really disappointing in general. I've got him in a couple of dynasty leagues and it's so frustrating to roster him. Yeah. Egan's good. Egan's really good. His numbers on the surface don't look great, but as Matt pointed out on Twitter or X that it's not a good pitching park, but he throws a lot of strikes, 30% strikeout rate, doesn't walk a lot of guys. The stuff is really good. The curveball's plus, the slider's plus, the splitter's good. But the fastball is like potentially elite. We're talking 94, 95, 19 to 20 inches of IVB, which is completely absurd. And honestly, he should debut early in 2027. So he's another guy that should be on your draft and hold radars as 2027 approaches.
Beautiful. Make notes of that. And hopefully those names come back up in the offseason. A couple more questions I have for you. Team wise, we'll start with team. Who do you think the biggest winners were as teams, just off the top of your head, through this deadline on the building the farm system side of things?
Yeah, obviously we talked about the Giants, and that's not because you're here. That's just because they really did well. Anytime you can get guys like Marquez and Lalanne, and just kind of reinforce that pitching staff that they've kind of needed to do for a while, I think that's really helpful. I think the Cardinals had a big win with getting Ragsdale and Frias in the Dustin May trade. They basically turned Dustin May into two top 100 prospects, which is pretty impressive. And May could completely bomb out, or he could just become, a stud again because the pedigree's there and the Brewers are great with what they do. I actually think the Angels did pretty well too. I really like the addition of Ballesteros. I like the Mason McGuire ad. And I really think Arjun Namala is going to be special. I can't believe the Blue Jays traded him, but here we are. Now they've got a guy that, they can build around as their cornerstone, franchise shortstop, and they can move off of a guy in Neto who's going to bring back a nice haul as well. So those are the teams that I think did really, really well.
Now, what about players? And those could be involved in those teams part of it, but like from a dynasty aspect, when you're going to redo your rankings based on like post trade deadline, and you probably already have, and you're working on it or whatever you're doing. But I know how you operate. So it's probably already like done and just had whatever. But like, who are some of the guys that got the biggest boost, I guess? And maybe it wasn't even someone traded, but the fact that someone's out of their system, it helped them out. So when you were going through things post deadline, are there a couple of prospects that maybe, you know, got some nice boosts due to the deadline?
Yeah, so just looking at my rankings off the top of my head, I think obviously with Luis Castillo getting traded out of Seattle, I think that opens the door for Cade Anderson, which we already knew the door was going to be open there, but Anderson is a guy that's going to be a complete stud. I think that's going to help out a lot. I think the Red Sox not getting a shortstop really solidified that Franklin Arias is their guy. I wouldn't be surprised if he's up in the next couple of weeks. I know it's aggressive, but this kid's really, really special. And I think that's going to help out a lot. I think that the Tigers adding Zaire Hope really fortifies their outfield because they can now roll with Hope, Green, and Clark in the outfield. That's pretty nasty. And then when you consider that McGonagall is developing as well as he is, I think that's a team that's going to be on the rise. I think that one player that really kind of is hurt by the trades, I think, is why am I blanking on this? Sorry.
No, you're good.
I'm just completely blanking. Yeah. Just completely
I don't know. That's why I don't know how you prospect guys do it. Like I'm dealing with 30 teams and they have 40 man rosters. Like you guys are nuts.
No. Oh no. The other guy I was thinking of is, the guy that's actually helped who is Charles Davelin with the Dodgers. I think he's a easy top 75 prospect right now. Getting Hope out of there kind of clears a little bit of pathway for him to kind of push himself up a little faster. Ultimately, these guys are still going to be blocked. But I think it does open some doors for him to, you know, potentially break out. So,
beautiful. All right. A couple of prospects got promoted this past week. I want to ask you about, and I already going to butcher his name again. The Cardinals, they called up, Hanoa,
Guardians.
Guardian, sorry, Angel Ganoa, right?
Angel Ganoa, yep.
Ganoa, god damn, so close. what's our expectations? Four hits in his debut, which has never been done by a Guardian prospect before.
Yeah, so the hit tool's advanced. We're talking about the Guardians kind of do this, right? They've got these guys they find in the middle infield. It's all about hit tool. There's usually a light power element to it, but not a lot of pop. I think that's kind of what Ganoa is as well. I think he's going to be a guy that could potentially win a batting title. He's got that kind of bat. I don't think he's going to hit for a ton of power. I think if you can get 10 to 12 home runs out of him, I think it's going to be fine. But yeah, it's really just, it's hit tool. There's a little bit of speed there. I think he's just a really solid player. I don't think he's ever going to be a superstar, but at some point, you know, he's probably going to slide over and play shortstop, and they'll have to figure out what they want to do with Rocchio because he's a really good defender as well. But if you've got Ganoa, even in redraft right now, he's going to give you some batting average boost down the stretch. So,
all right. So that leads to Joe G's question from the chat here. 12-team daily roto, add Ganoa, but drop Vladdy. I've got Soders from Bowers, Bichette, Lewis, Bush from field for first base and corner. Whew.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time dropping Vladimir Guerrero Jr., regardless of how bad he's struggling. I think Ganoa definitely gives you a batting average floor that'll help. I think you're going to get some production with runs scored, maybe a couple steals here and there, but I find it really tough to drop Vladimir Guerrero Jr. no matter how bad he's struggling right now.
That is very, very tricky. The other prospect I wanted to ask you about, because there's going to be many more that keep coming up and down, and through that, you already mentioned Arias, and we were hoping we see Baez and maybe Anderson, and who knows, maybe the Rockies pull their head out of the rear ends. They got Condon and company. Yeah. But we actually saw George Lombard get called up on Monday and go deep in his first game. He got another knock on Wednesday. What should we expect from Lombard? We saw the skills are very, very good. Obviously they put Volpe to AAA. So it appears to be Lombard's gig for the time being, unless he really, really tanks.
Yeah, it's his gig. This is a kid that's, I mean, legitimate top 25 prospect. He's got all the tools to be, you know, a complete star. The contact abilities have really progressed up this year, and that's kind of why he's advanced so far. He was really struggling to make contact early on in his career, and that's kind of the knock on his brother too, which we'll hear a lot about his brother in the next couple of months with the Marlins. But yeah, this is a five tool kid. I think he's obviously I know he's the shortstop of the future there, and yeah, he's special for sure.
All right, a couple listener questions from the Discord real quick, and I'll get you out of here. Mailman Mike says, what is Martin's take on the three prospects the Red Sox dealt away in the Rushman deal? We hit on that, Mailman. We got you. Bloom wants to know, this Bloom guy, Yeah, well, I don't know who he is, but Martin, how do you pivot from traditional prospect analysis and apply it to redraft, draft, and hold leagues?
Obviously not very well because I suck at those, but that's why I'm away from redraft. But no, so I probably don't do as good of a job as I could, honestly, in redraft, because especially draft and holds, because I do have the prospect knowledge. But I think I get a little bit too enamored with the tools and don't look so much at proximity. So I think that's the biggest issue that I found within my own system right now, is just I look at what's coming and try to project guys too far ahead and forget about guys that are close. And that's how you miss out, you know, on guys like, you know, Otto Lopez and guys like that that just become stars. Cooper Pratt is a really good player as well. I kind of just overlook, you know, proximity and how that goes. So yeah, it's definitely not something that I've had a lot of success with drafted holds and transitioning from prospects into redraft. But I think the biggest thing is proximity, path to playing time, looking at the skills like you guys always talk about, and just trying to put it all together and make sure that you're making the right decisions. But it's a lot easier said than done.
Maybe it makes you feel any better in drafted holds when I ever try to approach a prospect. I don't know about proximity either, so it's not that big of a deal. Our buddy Canton Dog wants to know, you may have already answered this, but which teams improved their farm system and hurt the – okay, we did the improved. Who hurt their farm system the most after the deadline?
Obviously, I think the Red Sox hurt their farm system quite a bit, and that's not just bias. That's legit. Like, they weren't very deep to begin with. They had already – you know, they had a lot of promotions, obviously, with Toley and Early and, you know, guys like that. But their system wasn't overly deep to begin with, especially on the pitching side of things. So when you take away your two top pitching prospects, that definitely hurts. Let's see. I mean, the Cubs didn't really give away a lot. I think the Jefferson Rojas thing is more of a shock factor than anything. He's a really, really good player, but they still have a lot of depth in their system. And I think, honestly, the Dodgers got away with, you know, highway robbery, to be honest with you, because at the end of the day, if Skubal was really going to go to L.A. the whole time, and Scott Harris, the general manager of the Tigers, knew that, he really could have just pillaged that system. They've got so much talent. They've got, I think, 30 or 40 players inside my top 400. I mean, they're just deep. They're just so, so deep. And so they got away with, you know, highway robbery, in my opinion. So I think those are the two teams that stand out the most. But overall, I don't think anybody really damaged their system aside from the Red Sox.
All right. Good to know. Well, this was awesome, man. We covered, or you covered, a ton on this. And it was very informative to me because, like I said, I don't know a lot about the prospects. I like to have an idea on what's going on here. And I guess one reason I don't know a ton about them, it's a lot of youngsters, as you mentioned, not just because they're prospects, but like bottom half of the minor league systems for the most part. But some big dogs that we might actually see, like I said, Ballesteros is already up. You said we might see a couple more guys this year or early next year, which is great to hear. It wasn't just, hey, let's trade as many single A guys as we can and see how it rolls. And then there's also some of the not so fantasy impacts, like the Nationals built their future bullpen in a trade, which might not help us, but in real life baseball, that's going to be tremendous, of course. So lots of great stuff there, Martin. Before we head out, remind everybody where they can find you and all the great work you got going on.
Yeah, so I got the Substack, Four Seed Fantasy. There's a link to that in my X and Blue Sky handles. Got Pitcher List, doing Dynasty stuff over there, Top 400 Dynasty, co-hosting the Destination Dynasty podcast with Matt Heckman and Jacob Milhan. Just kind of everywhere I need to be. So whatever, if anyone's got questions or anything like that, you can always email forcingfantasy@gmail.com. You can message me on the socials and ask questions about that. I'm always open to talk trades, always open to just give advice. So any of my followers can attest to that. If you've slid into my DMs and asked questions, I'm always willing to help and give you the best breakdown I can. So always great to talk with you, Bubba. I appreciate the exposure that you and, you know, Ryan have given me over the years, and appreciate it.
Well, you do great work, man. You're a great person. We love getting to know you, calling you a friend, and help enjoy your work and support your work, because it's really, really good stuff. So I really recommend checking it out, everybody. Martin busts his rear end, and I remember when Martin was just, you know, hanging out at FPAS, and he turns into just a content machine as he continues to go on. So go support the hard workers out there, the independents of the world. And until next time, This was Bench with Bubba, episode 872. Catch y'all later.